meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and I am joined by my co-host, Loretta Freilich, who is a former criminal prosecutor for the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, now happily retired and doing work for the Lord full-time. And we are happy to be sitting in, as we do on most Mondays, for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And we hope you had a good weekend. Loretta, did you have a good weekend? Second weekend in Advent.
Yes, Mary.
Light that second candle.
I had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I have a very dear friend. Perhaps you know her. Mary Fiorito.
That's me.
That's you.
I know. I do know her. Yes.
And we went out to the cemetery.
And we did indeed.
Dropped off at graveside your family's and mine pro-life wreaths. So we supported the pro-life wreath sale in our parish. And went out and visited two super huge pro-lifers. At least, you know, I know your family and mine, and it was just nice to include them. I, as usual, had a good cry.
Yeah.
And my dear friend Mary gave me a big hug, and I felt better immediately.
You know, listeners, pray for our Loretta, because she is, really struggling, I think, with her mother's death, as anyone would be after having their mother with them for so long. You know, a lot of people say things like, you know, you're so lucky, you know, your mom was 94, you're so lucky you had her that long. But, you know, that makes it all the more difficult when they pass.
It does.
Because
it does.
You don't, you know, you really, you don't know life without them. And so.
But, you know, Mary, God is never without a purpose and a plan.
Yes.
And I want you to know that I know this plan was that my mom would go ahead of my dear friend's mother. My mother, Nina, lost her mom just last week, and I'm able to send her those texts that include, breathe. You know, this, you will get to the other side of this. So
You will. God, you can't see it now, Loretta. Yep. It's too hard to see it now. And as I told you, as we stood there at the cemetery, it would be odd if you weren't experienced. You know, if you were happy-go-lucky and, you know, glad your mom was gone, I'd be more worried, frankly.
There you go.
You know, it is completely normal. And, you know, a lot of people gave me this advice when I lost my parents.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go through all what they call the firsts. You got to go through the first year of everything.
And
And then you kind of get used to the new normal. But there will come a time, and I did not think this would be possible, but there will come a time when you can look back on your mom and feel joy and feel happiness and feel gratitude and not have it wound your heart.
Yes.
You know, it won't wound you. You will feel joy when you think about your mom.
Yeah. And even now I'm able to help my other friend who has just lost
because
her
because you've just
mom
gone through it.
I've just gone through it. So,
so
God is never without a purpose and a plan for all of us, ladies and gentlemen. I tell my confirmation kids, you were created for such a time as this, just like Esther was for her people. You were created for a time such as this, and it, you need to be in prayer, and that's why we have Advent, to prepare for the Lord, and we need to be in prayer and and just looking for where God's calling us.
Right.
But I thank you. I had a wonderful time at the cemetery. I am not above a good cry.
And you were so good to get that wreath for me.
Oh.
For my mom. No, I'm grateful for that. You know, I appreciated it. And, you know, it's really... it was that because I might not have thought of that on my own, you know, and you were good enough to
Mary, got a lot more going on. You've got three kids and a husband.
Listeners, if you have an extra prayer, send up a prayer for my high school daughter because she is just overwhelmed with homework. And it I am just appalled by the amount of homework she has, I have to say, frankly. I mean, hours and hours and hours of homework every night. And she is just a kid that likes to do her work very thoroughly. So we have been getting very little sleep. And I will be so grateful when these final exams are over. So
yes.
It is. Anyway, it is not any fun. But just trying to get the house decorated. When do you put up yours? Are you going to do it a little differently this year, given your mom's?
Well, you know, interesting you should ask that, Mary, because and I really give this advice to everybody out there that is facing a family challenge. Last year, I put up, and it's a beautiful story. I have a little tiny little lit Christmas tree, and
okay.
It's very cute. And what I have put on it over the years are, you know how those, like a lot of times you get packages and they're wrapped so lovely and
right.
The ribbon has a little cardboard.
I envy the skill of doing that. It's just, anyway, go
but
ahead.
But anyway.
Yes, I know what you mean.
So I put those on the tree. And you know, when people wrap candy bars in like those Santas and stuff. So
right.
I have like an army of Santas underneath this tree.
Okay.
But what happened, the reason I got this tree, I was working and I was on a unit they call felony review.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you, there is nothing harder than investigating a murder.
Yeah.
Or a senseless car accident that kills people.
Yeah.
And I was working felony review and I had like three different cases that were going on simultaneously. And
oh,
it was very, very hard. And my mom was super cool. My mom was like, I got Christmas. Don't you worry about anything. But I knew she couldn't put up the tree.
Right.
So I went one night on the way home, bought this little tree and set it up. And the next morning I come out and that top half is not lit and the bottom half is.
Yeah.
So I call my girlfriend and her daughter. Wasn't you, Mir.
No.
I called my girlfriend and her daughter, Molly, who is like my own. She said, I'll take it to the store and just get another one. And all I wanted her to do was just box it up.
Get the lights. Light fixed.
And get me another tree.
Right.
This young girl went out, exchanged it, took all the ornaments off, and put them all back. So when I walked in, it was perfect.
Wow.
And it was just beautiful. And I always think of Molly when I put that tree up. And so last year, that's all I could do.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the big tree.
Yeah, and you know, and some years are like that.
Yeah.
Years are like that. And they don't all have to be, you know, dragging out every single thing you own, you know?
So I really encourage any of you that are going through a stressful time. You know, maybe you've lost a job. Maybe you've lost a family member. Maybe for whatever reason you can't face Christmas. I really just urge you, at the very minimum, put up your nativity scene.
Right. Yes.
And
that's not hard.
No.
Anybody can do that. Yeah.
And focus on baby Jesus.
Right.
And what he comes to bring. And when we think about it, Jesus came to bring salvation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to pray for somebody who's away from the church,
right.
Who's away from your family, who doesn't know Jesus and isn't claiming to want to know Jesus.
Right.
You know, so take it easy on yourself, but there's all kinds of wonderful ways that we can prepare and we can pray. And it just because your Christmas doesn't look like Macy's under the tree in the walnut room is no reason not to be able to celebrate a wonderful Christmas. So that would just be my little advice. But we are going to go big this year. My mother.
Yes.
My mother loved Christmas.
Yeah.
My mother had Christmas decorations in the bathroom.
Oh, that's beautiful. So, I love that.
Yes. And she really loved Christmas, and she loved being a part of everybody's Christmas. And she loved family around at Christmas. And so as the kids are, you know, we agreed we're going to celebrate Christmas. My niece and nephew, when they started coming to me and saying, can we have this at Christmas dinner? And it's all the old favorites. I thought, you know
beautiful.
What, we're just going to do it.
That's
we're going
to
get it up. And, you know, they're being so good to me. They're helping me get the boxes out of the basement,
good.
Which for me is half the battle.
Good.
But anyway, how about you, Mayor? What are you going to do?
Well, you know what? I want to, before I share that, I was reading something on Sunday at Mass. And listeners, if you don't subscribe to the Magnificat, that's a great gift to give yourself this year. Get a subscription to Magnificat magazine. You get, every month a little purse or size, a small size little missal that has the readings of the day. And then there's also generally a reflection every day. But it's the reflection on Sunday was from Catherine de Heck Doherty, who was a servant of God, so her cause for canonization. She is the woman, she was Russian-born, actually, despite having the very Irish last name of Doherty, and she founded the Madonna House Apostolate in Canada. And so they serve the poor in, I think, six different countries now. But so she was talking about how they prepared for Christmas when she was growing up in Russia. And it's a mm-hmm. really beautiful reflection. And she said, my mother used to say that the days of Advent were like building a golden stairway that would lead us to a star, the Star of Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. And this, in turn, would lead us straight to the Christ child. When I was young, that stairway was real. And every day I could see and touch each step as it was being built. The first step was made of cleanliness. We began to clean the house from inside out. Then there was the Advent fast, to clean our souls of our past faults and sins, to make penance for them and to wash them in tears. And then lastly, just like in Lent, we fasted from some foods. We did not eat meat, milk products, eggs, and sugar during Advent. We replaced them with fish, vegetables, and honey. But there was a difference because in Lent, Russian women wore dark garments, took off their jewelry, and allowed no music in the house, but not in Advent. On the contrary, we talked of new clothing. There was a flurry of buying materials and fabrics and of sewing. There was music in the air. We practiced hymns and songs to be sung on that holy night of Christmas Eve. And even if the fast itself was fasting, it was one of joyous expectation, saving up our sugar and our eggs and our milk for Christmas Day. We went to Mass, we went to communion, we went to confession, we went to evening prayer services in the church. And to accompany these inner preparations, outwardly we cleaned and scrubbed the house feverishly to make room for baby Jesus, everyone humming snatches from tunes as they did so. The first things that we cleaned and polished during Advent were our icons, which shone and became alive under the flickering shadows of votive lamps, red and blue and green lights. To my childish eyes, they were the forerunner of the lovely candles and ornaments on our Christmas tree. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, that is beautiful.
You know, my parents kind of, it is a fasting season, but it's not a sad, strict fast like Lent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is customary to give up some things, you know, to save for a very big, you know, that's what kind of makes me sad about everybody doing these huge Christmas parties and extravagant things during Advent, because then what do you do on Christmas Day? It's like a letdown.
It is.
And then on the 26th, everybody's moving on and throwing their Christmas tree out. And, you know, during Advent, you know, put aside a little extra money every week, you know, eat more simply so that you can have the tenderloin on Christmas Day, you know, so that
right.
you can have the nicer champagne on Christmas Day, you know, don't drink
yes.
during it, whatever, you know, there's all sorts of different little ways we can fast. So, my husband, as I have mentioned before on this show, is very keen on observing Advent. So we will probably put the tree up at some point this week. It's St. Lucy's Day on Wednesday. And so we will likely put up the tree because St. Lucy is known for light. That's what Lucy means, is light. And she's a patron saint of Sweden. And so it is customary for girls in a family in Sweden on that day to come into their parents with a crown of candles on their heads and to greet their parents with hot coffee and saffron buns. And so we try to observe with hot cross buns or something similar on St. Lucie's Day. So, again, all of it will be muted because of final exams for my kids, but, you know, we try at least. So, but the other big feast day this week is going to be Our Lady of Guadalupe, which will be tomorrow.
Oh, exciting, isn't it?
And, Loretta, you're going to walk us through that feast day. But before we get started, because I don't want it to break, why don't you mention the event that's coming up, and then we'll take our break and we can talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Terrific.
Uninterrupted.
Well, but anyway, I learned about this saint from Mark Nemo. He was a presenter at our youth confirmation retreat, and he brought to our young people's attention Blessed Carlos Acutis.
Okay.
I had heard of him but didn't really know much about him. I knew that he died at a very young age, like 15, but he was a young boy that was so kind. Everybody knew him, and thousands came to his funeral. And he loved Jesus.
Wow.
He gave his money away to the poor that in the streets in Italy where he lived. But one of the things that he was super sure of was that Jesus was really present in his person in the Eucharist.
Hmm.
And he created a Eucharistic Miracles of the World exhibit and a website, and he collected about 158 miracles.
Wow.
Yes. And
just sort of on his own. This wasn't like a religion project in school or anything.
No, he loved Jesus too much to have to do it. But what's so beautiful are the Vatican International Exhibition is now traveling, and it is coming to St. Luke, St. Bernardine Parish in River Forest and Forest Park. And it's going to be open to everyone, and there it's going to be from December 16th to the 17th at St. Luke.
So it's going to be at your parish.
It is, and then it's going to move to St. Bernardine Farron Hall, and that will be from December 19th
until Christmas Eve. And how were you able
to
secure this? That's wonderful.
You know, we have a new young youth minister by the name of Olga Green. And Olga is just passionate about bringing the young people to an experience of life lived full out as a Catholic and as somebody in love with Jesus. And so she found this. It's been the Archdiocese has had it available to members of the Catholic faith. You can bring this to your parish.
Oh, wow.
If you'd like. But I would really encourage, you know, we've talked about this before. We've talked about the Eucharistic revival that's going to be happening next July.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everybody can get in the car and pay, you know, a hefty ticket.
Right. It's,
to go
it's
to,
a sacrifice to go.
It is. It is. But what you can do is this exhibit is open for free. It's going to be at my parish in River Forest and then in Forest Park. We have two campuses as we've combined our parishes. And I kid you not, the kids are all excited about it, which I found amazing because it was presented to them. And you'll see some, there's, you know, images.
So the kids in the school will come and CCD kids,
yes,
I assume?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. You'll see, you know, images of the bleeding host.
Wow.
You'll hear about different Eucharistic. There's one, Luciano. It's wonderful. I've been there. I've seen it. And it is the story in a church of a priest who was passing through, and he had the obligation to say Mass, and he had to stop at this church. And he goes, you know what, Lord, I don't really believe you. You're here.
Wow.
And the bleeding, the host bled for him to show him that, yes, he was. And there has been a story. I wish I knew all the facts, but let's just say Archbishop Bergoglio brought it to scientists in New York because a bleeding host from his archdiocese had been brought to him.
Okay.
But what's so beautiful is when the scientists go to examine this host and try and figure out, you know, is this possible? What is this? The host comes back as coming from the heart, muscle of a 33-year-old man who was under intense physical stress.
Wow.
Who is that? That's our Jesus.
Yeah, of course.
At the cross.
Yeah.
And so it's really, I really would encourage moms and dads to take their kids. You know, you have a wonderful opportunity then to talk about the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. And you also have a marvelous opportunity to say, this 15-year-old boy, and he was quite the exhibit presenter, but he also was a mystic.
Okay.
And I think he died of leukemia. He got leukemia.
Yeah, kind of cancer.
Yeah. And he was dying, and he told his mother not to be sad, that the Lord was going to bless her with two, was going to bless her with two more.
Hmm.
And he died, he went to heaven, and not long after, the mom was determined to be pregnant, and she gave birth to twins.
Wow.
And he had foretold that to her. So anyway, y'all come.
Yes.
And it's at St. Luke's.
And is there information on the website, too?
There is.
Okay,
and you
terrific.
Can go on the website at STLSTBparish.org.
Okay.
And you'll get lots of information, and it just will be a marvelous experience.
Okay, and we'll get that in the show notes as well.
Excellent.
So listeners can go there afterwards. Okay, terrific. Well, we're going to go to our first break. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Fralick sitting in for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change.
Hi, this is Trent Horn from Catholic Answers Live. Some skeptics ask, how could a virgin give birth to the Son of God? Without God's intervention, she couldn't. But if God were powerful enough to make a universe from nothing, then why reject his ability to become man in the womb of his mother Mary? This Christmas, let's pray for skeptics to encounter the real reason for the season, our God and Savior, Jesus Christ.
You are listening to
Mary Fiorito
and
Loretta Fralick
on Winds of Change.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Did you know that a princess helped introduce St. Nicholas to the Western world? This happened in the year 972 when Princess Theophano, the niece of Emperor John of Constantinople, brought a mosaic icon of yours truly, St. Nicholas, to Rome as a wedding gift to her husband-to-be, Otto II, the future emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. After their royal wedding mass celebrated by Pope John XIII in the old St. Peter's Basilica, Princess Theophano became the Lady Di of her age. Suddenly, everything she did, including her love of St. Nicholas, seemed to be copied by everyone. In fact, besides me, there's one more thing she introduced to the Western world that you'll use during your meal this Christmas. The dinner fork. So as we raise our dinner forks this Christmas, let's remember the royal princess who worshiped the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords as we proclaim, Christ is born, glorify him.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Mary Fiorito, and I am Loretta Fralick. And we are talking the exciting days of Christmas. And our topic, the miraculous image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And Mary, do you know the history of Our Lady of Guadalupe?
I do, yeah, for the most part. I sure do. I've been to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, both in Mexico City and the beautiful one in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Tell us about the La Crosse, Wisconsin Shrine.
Oh, it is stunning. And if you have never been there, it should absolutely be on your Catholic bucket list. It was established by Cardinal Raymond Burke, who's the former Archbishop of St. Louis and the former head of one of the Vatican offices for canon law, the Roman Rota. And so a very prestigious man within the church, and he had a tremendous devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And he was he's also the former bishop up in that area of Wisconsin. And there's a lot of beer money up in that neck of the woods, believe it or not. So one of the
cheese.
Yes, but the beer money is significant. So one of the I can't remember which of the brewing families it was, but if I am recalling these details correctly. One, it would be like the Coors family in Colorado. So one of those families donated a significant amount of stunningly beautiful land for a shrine. And it was designed by Duncan Stroik, the world-renowned church architect from the University of Notre Dame. It is beautiful. They have first class relics of a multitude of saints. There is a walkable Stations of the Cross. They are in the process now of building a retreat house to go next to the shrine. It has a little gift shop and restaurant. Just a marvelous place to go. And it's like driving through a postcard. It's in one of the most beautiful parts of Wisconsin.
You had me at gift shop.
Yeah, well, hey, and you can buy, beautiful Christmas ornaments from all over the world. And from Mexico City, I have a lovely Guadalupe ornament that I got from there. So definitely worth it. If you cannot make it to Mexico, this is the next best thing. And they have a little shrine to Juan Diego. It's just a beautiful place of prayer and, liturgy and music. So just I can't recommend it enough. And there's a beautiful garden because Our Lady Guadalupe is the patroness of unborn children. There's a beautiful mausoleum for babies who were lost either in miscarriage, stillbirth, or abortion. And so you can have your child's remains interred there, and a lot of women who miscarry.
Wow, I did not know that.
And it's beautiful, yeah.
So. Well, I've only been to Mexico and had the most beautiful pilgrimage with the Magnificat ladies from the organization Magnificat.
Okay.
They ran a pilgrimage, and my girlfriend was doing the music for the trip, and she asked if I wanted to come along.
Huh.
And I got to be on the worship team. So it was so much fun, I can't even begin to tell you. But, the whole place is just incredibly, it's all around Our Lady of Guadalupe, and there's so many things that are said. It's kind of like, I forget who said it, but it was like, Mexico is 90% Catholic,
right?
But 100% Guadalupan.
That's very good. I have not heard that, but that makes sense to me.
Yes.
Yeah. So even non-Catholics,
even non-Catholics, and I have a special affinity. A lot of my victims, when I was in the state's attorney's office, they were Hispanic.
Okay.
And so, when you work with children and children are believed, they begin to heal.
Right.
And I used to ask the parents, I had this adorable children's picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and I used to ask their parents, may I give them this card? And used to tell the girls that when you are sad or when you don't know what to do, you pray to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And they loved it. But, we also have a shrine to Our Lady of Guadalupe here in Chicago.
Oh, that's right.
That's
right. Okay, this is good. We should mention this. Because
it's very busy already.
Yes, and it's going to be on the traffic reports tomorrow morning, so you'll have the heads up. Okay, go ahead.
It is up at Maryville.
Right.
And events started this afternoon at 12 o'clock, just at the same time our show did.
Okay.
Where they're leading the rosary and people are gathering and bringing roses. And there'll be an opening mass at 8 o'clock tonight.
Okay.
And the most Reverend Jeffrey Grob, our bishop up in that vicariate, will be saying the mass tonight.
Wonderful.
And there's also all kinds of things going on. There's a Guadalupe torch run. They're going to have the serenading tonight at 8 o'clock. So there's lots of stuff going on tonight, and events follow tomorrow morning.
Right, and then it's very early in the morning.
12 a.m., which is very
early. So it's at dawn, and then there's what they call mañanitas, which are the first. So as the sun is rising, there's this beautiful mariachi music.
Well, it's 7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Okay, well, that's a little late, because usually it's at 5. They're slacking over there. Wow.
They're trying to give everybody time to get there. The traffic is so heavy.
Well, people walk. Well, and it's not car traffic.
No.
It is walking.
It is
walking.
People will walk.
From Pilsen, from other neighborhoods, Little Village. And they will walk all the way to Des Plaines, and they walk down River Road. And so you will hear, if you're listening to just the secular news tomorrow, WGN, or you're listening to WBBM traffic, they will mention the pilgrimage because it basically shuts down all of River Road, the thousands of people walking.
Right. And, the Chicago Catholic did a fabulous job of listing the opportunities and what time everything is happening. But you should also know that there are three remote parking lots that are listed at St. Emily Parish, at the Plaza Palawaukee, and Oakton Community College.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes, there's a $15 charge, I think, at the Oakton Community College
one. That's not awful.
But, you know, and so people need to know that there is that going on. But we have lots to talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe. The first, I think, is important that we just do the cliff notes of what happened. And I personally think it's absolutely adorable that a 53-year-old man, Juan Diego, was going to daily mass, and he encounters this woman who says, go to the bishop and ask the bishop to build a church here. I want to be known as the Mother of God. I can tell you I would look at her and say, oh, sure, okay, thanks, bye.
Right.
And instead, he's like, okay. Now, this is a man who can't even go to communion at mass except for once a year because of the way the church structured things. But he is going to mass every day just to be present
right.
at the miracle.
And to make a spiritual communion.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you can. So now he goes to the bishop, and the bishop clearly deflects him. I don't know, depending on which version of the story you read, he might not have gotten past the priests who
right.
were there to guard the bishop. So
right.
the next day, he has to... I don't know if she came to him again, and then it still didn't work. And then the third day, he avoided the hill.
He tried to avoid Our Lady.
Yeah,
tried to hide
he tried
from her,
to avoid.
Which I just find hilarious.
I think that's hysterical.
Yeah.
And he avoided it, but God bless him. His uncle was sick. He needed a doctor, and he was going to do an end run around Our Lady
right.
and just go get that doctor.
Right.
And that, yet there she is.
That's it's
and
so adorable,
I know.
Isn't it? Just the humble simplicity of all of it. It's just there. Anyway, it's so beautiful.
He explains himself, which I love. I had to go get a doctor for my uncle.
Right.
And she looks, and this is one of my favorite lines in all of the life of the church.
Yes.
Oh, Johnny. Am I not she who is your mother?
Yes.
Like, you can bring this one to me, people.
Right.
And so...
I will take care of you.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so... You're right. It's
and
so
I've
beautiful.
And I've been to the church where there's a spring that the local people still use.
Hmm.
I brought home water from that spring.
Okay.
And it is a spring where... And what's amazing is there will be bands, little colonies of people coming from their small town, and they'll be playing bands, and their band will have trumpets and tubas and drums. And the instant they hit the steps of this church...
Hmm.
And it's not the Our Lady of Guadalupe church that's up on the hill. This
right.
is the church where the spring is. Instantly, it's quiet.
Interesting.
And these people come in. They take water from the spring to go home. I mean, I took water from the
right.
spring. And then they go back out, and then they start the parade again. And they're
Isn't
all
that beautiful?
Dressed in amazing costumes. And, you know, it's beautiful to watch. But anyway... Now, Juan Diego goes and he brings, Mary says, you know, he says to Blessed Mother, you know, they're not believing me. You know, I don't know what she can do to help me here. They're not believing me. And she
yeah.
points to roses. Now, it's December, so it's winter in Mexico. And roses, as you know, Mary, you are the avid gardener.
Yes.
Do not bloom in December.
No, they don't. And certainly not Castilian roses,
no.
which is... I think specifically what Bishop Zarumiaga, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, that's he specifically asked for that particular type of rose.
Mm-hmm.
So
she points to these roses, and he tells Juan Diego, fill your tilma up. Now, this will be important later when we talk about the tilma and talk about the image. But he fills his tilma up, And off he goes to talk to the bishop again.
And she arranges the roses in his tilma for
him. Yes.
And the tilma was a coat or a cape, kind of like a poncho, I guess, would be the best.
It's like the hoodie of the day.
Right, the hoodie of the day. But your tilma was very important because you often used, it was your blanket at night.
Yes.
It was your covering during the day.
Right.
So a man's tilma was very important to him, and it was... It would have been woven out of...
It was woven out of cactus.
Cactus, right, like the husks or something, right?
I was at a demonstration where they took one of the, what do they call those, prongs or needles of the cacti, and they pulled, the needle is about as big as your index finger, and it curls. And what happens is they pull that out, and it creates a whole strip. And then they weave it together. So you are literally wearing cactus.
Hmm.
And cactus has a shelf life of maybe 20 years.
Wow.
Maybe. Okay. So we're back in 1531. And anyway, he takes the roses in his tilma. He goes and the bishop asks, did you bring me proof? And Juan Diego opens his tilma and there. Out come all the roses, and he's
looking. Castilian roses.
Yes. Mary.
Which is very, well, so
no,
those are the roses
true.
Found in Spain that don't grow in Mexico.
Correct.
So that's, you know, blooming in December, roses of Castile, as they call them, blooming in December in Mexico. I mean, just unheard of.
So what happens is he looks and sees what the bishop and the other men and women in the household are now adoring. And it is this magnificent portrait of Our Lady of Guadalupe, now called Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, you know, there's so many things to talk about in the, there's so many things to talk about in this image.
Yeah.
And the way science has examined it.
Right. It's been scientifically examined. That makes it very different from some of the others. Okay, well, before we get back into that, why don't we go to the break?
Yep.
So that we don't get interrupted during our discussion of the image.
Yes.
So listeners, this is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich sitting in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Don't go away.
St. Stanislaus Kostka. The Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our podcast app. This position would be a worthy opportunity if you're retired and where you can make a difference. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are middays, Monday through Friday. Email a letter telling us about yourself to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich. We're sitting in for Father Anthony, and we are discussing all things Our Lady of Guadalupe, whose feast day, the patroness of the Americas. Our Lady of Guadalupe will be celebrated tomorrow, December 12th. And Loretta was just about to explain to us before we went to the break, the image itself, which is quite detailed. And there's many, it's like reading a book almost, right? And I guess for the people of that time who wouldn't have been able to read many of them, you know, God spoke to people through images. So Loretta, help us unpack that.
Well, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, first of all, we talked about the tilma And the tilma is totally made of cactus.
Right.
It should have disintegrated by now.
Right.
And yet the Mexican people, the Mexican Catholics, have it in their cathedral. And they're really, really smart. So people don't get clogged watching or looking at it because it's truly mesmerizing. The tilma in the image are on display, and to watch it, or to see it in Mexico, to reverence it, you get on a conveyor belt.
Okay.
You don't like those walking at the airport, those belts that help you walk at the airport. So you can never really stop and stare at
it. So it's like a conveyor belt.
It is.
Kind of thing. Okay.
It's physically a conveyor belt.
It is an actual. It's not like one. It is an actual one. Okay.
So what I found so amazing was all of the different images and what's going on as you can read this image. And as everyone knows, you see it at all the pro-life rallies. Out comes the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and she is paraded around in the procession and the protests. And it's because she's the patroness of the unborn, and she is clearly pregnant
in this
image,
right?
And it's the maternity band that is like umpire, where you are wearing a style, and she's wearing the belt up over her womb. But you know what I found amazing was, if you can look at her neck, she's wearing a black cross, and it is the same cross that's displayed on the images of the boats, the Spanish boats that came over from Spain to Mexico.
Okay.
And her brooch is the same black cross.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yes.
Huh.
And it was, you know, to say that.
Now, I don't think I've ever heard that before.
Yes.
That's so interesting.
It is. And one of the other things that I really found so amazing, if you look at her mantle, she is wearing a mantle with and when you see the image up closer, or images that have been replicated, the stars on her cloak.
Right.
They're all, they're not in order, you know?
I mean,
it's like nobody took this cloth.
They're
and,
not all
and
2 inches apart or what
and,
have
and,
you.
You know, so they're 3 inches apart and 4 inches. No. The stars on her cloak are the same place they were in the heavens on the night she appeared, but they are as though you were looking at this cloak from heaven, and you were looking at the stars.
So from above.
From above. Huh. Well, not just from above, like from heaven. So you are looking at these stars as if God were looking at them.
Interesting. So God put that, you know.
It's like his view of us on earth, which I found just so amazing.
That is fantastic.
It is. And they represent the sky and the universe.
Right.
And I know that it is so incredible when you are able to see it, that really the images just don't do it justice.
No,
I don't. What I also found so interesting is, not that I don't find like everything interesting, but what I found so interesting is Mary's skin tone. As you are further back from it, it appears lighter. It's still a brownish skin tone.
Right.
But as you come closer, it is darker.
Yes. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
So
she was clearly identifying with the mestiza,
the indigenous people,
right?
Yes. Now.
And some of them were also married into or were in relationships with the Spanish natives,
right.
So that they were mixed race,
right.
And that posed difficulties often on both sides for the mixed race child. So I think there's some speculation that she might have been, it's a little ambiguous, her skin color, so that mixed race people who were indigenous and Spanish in background would have felt an affinity with her.
Right. Right.
So.
And this Our Lady of Guadalupe's appearance is brought 9 million natives to the Catholic faith. And what's so interesting, and probably the other reason, not just that she's pregnant, but they used to, the indigenous people used to offer up their baby.
Yes, this for, is, yeah, this is
to
a very,
the Aztec god.
There was child sacrifice, human sacrifice. Yeah.
Yes. They toss those babies in this little pit of fire.
Right.
And offer it up to the Aztec god. And it was this symbol that brought an end to child sacrifice.
Right.
And that, to me, is all of it.
Now, is that, let's talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. In what way did it bring about the end? Did the people see it and think, okay, we can't do this anymore? Was it, was there something within the image that made them realize that was a retribution to them, in terms of their...
What do you mean?
So what about the image made them stop doing child sacrifice?
Just the way in which they were able to see the image for themselves and were able to, were converted to her.
Right.
Through looking at the image.
Right.
And looking at the story that it told and looking at the special ways in which the images... how do I explain it? The way in which the image spoke to them.
Right. So it was something about her being pregnant. Was that part of it as well in terms of?
Okay. All of it.
So the totality of the image and not just. Okay.
Right. And that her hands are joined in prayer. And they speak of someone greater than she is. Her head's bowed in reverence to her child, Jesus, that we know, well, to the Lord God. But, when they say, Mary is Mary's standing on the moon because she is the reflection of the sun and not the other way around.
Right.
So I think that there's so much in just looking and meditating on this image. But, as the years went by, in the 1950s, they examined the tilma in using some scientific opportunities.
Right.
And in the 1950s, they used a powerful magnifying lens and examined her eyes.
Right.
And they discovered that in the pupil of her right eye, the features of a bearded man and two other figures.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1979, a man from the Mexican Center of Guadalupan Studies, Jose Aste Tunsman, researched the image and particularly the eyes. And he magnified the iris of the Virgin's eyes 2,500 times.
Wow.
And found imprinted on them a highly detailed picture of at least 13 people.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I knew about the two. I knew that the one that they believe, which is how they get some of the images of Juan Diego now.
Right.
That one they believe to be him.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me about the...
Well, they magnified
so
the others, iris.
That's so interesting.
And they found this highly detailed picture of at least 13 people.
Okay.
And he was able to identify all the people imprinted in the eyes, including an Indian family with several children.
Okay.
And he believes that it is a hidden message, and it was kept hidden until now because until modern technology was able to make it known. And because the family is under such attack.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, of course, centuries went by before we discovered these details about the image, right?
I mean,
we knew it hadn't disintegrated.
Right.
We knew from the clothing she was wearing that she was pregnant.
Right.
We knew there were stars on it, but I don't think that was discovered until fairly recently, too, the placement of the stars and what they mean, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And that she was appearing as one of the indigenous people, which was a message to them about their dignity, their human dignity, and her love for them personally, which is really beautiful. But the reflection Yeah. It's almost like it's like a photograph.
It is.
You know, it's the...
Well, your eyes take that photograph.
Right.
If they examine your eyes, they take the photograph of what you're looking at. So it's as if she was looking at Juan Diego in one.
It's incredible.
And a family in another.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really interesting that... the missionaries saw a relationship between Our Lady of Guadalupe and Immaculate Conception. And I think that, you know, we talk about this on the show all the time, the importance of the dignity of women.
Right.
And she appeared as a young maiden, a virgin, a woman who resembled the Indians and who had not been violated by the Spaniards.
Yeah, it's...
And, you know, it's when you have conquerors coming in and at your, you know, they make those encampments, the people surrounding those encampments are subject to abuse.
Right.
Which is why St. Juniper Serra moved the camps of the Californian Indians into the land.
Huh.
Because the Spanish conquistadors or soldiers were out there on the coastline and had beautiful camps. But Juniper Serra saw, if I move these people inward, inland, they will not be as abused as if I leave them living side by side.
Right.
And
interesting.
That was one of his huge
contributions.
Yes,
so many. And it's very heartbreaking to me that he is so maligned now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And
we're going to take his statue out.
Yeah. It's just awful. And but that's a conversation for another day.
Yes.
Because this is a busy week for saints this week.
Yes,
the second week in Advent. And thank you. Our Lady, of course, is deserves primacy of place when we're
Absolutely.
Celebrating feast days.
Absolutely.
Of course, not in relation to our Lord, but any of the saints. She is the first among equals with the saints and heaven, and because she was so specially chosen by our Lord. But the day after, on the 13th, a Saint's Day, very important to my family.
Yes.
The Feast of Saint Lucy, also called Santa Lucia. If you've never heard the Santa Lucia song, you can Google it. There's a number of, which is one of the Italian tenors. Pavarotti might have done a rendition of Santa Lucia. So it's just beautiful, but most commonly called St. Lucy or Santa Lucia. St. Lucia of Syracuse was a Roman Christian martyr who died during the Diocletian persecution. And she, interestingly enough, she's venerated as a saint not only by Catholics, but also by Anglicans, by Lutherans, and in the Eastern Orthodox community. So she's one of only eight women who is explicitly commemorated by Catholics in the canon of the Mass. So if we're doing the first Eucharistic prayer, I think it is, you will hear Lucy's name mentioned. And there's only eight female names mentioned, and Lucy's one of them. So that's how important she is as a martyr. So the feast day is observed in Western Christianity on the 13th of December. She was very much honored during the Middle Ages, and she is so the other names, the ones that I can just recall off the top of my head in the canon of the Mass are so Agatha, Agnes, Cecilia, Catherine, and Lucy were the, you know, among the early martyrs. And she was thought to have been born to noble parents, so were quite wealthy. Her father was Roman. And she had consecrated herself and her virginity to God.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they, you know, tried to get her married off. And long story short, they martyred her by poking her eyes out. And so that's why I went to St. Lucy's grade school, along with Bob Newhart. There's another little fun fact. As a child, and when we would walk in the morning.
I don't think Bob Newhart was there when you were there.
No, he's a few years ahead of me.
Okay.
We also went to the same high school. So there you go. He went to St. Lucy's and then to St. Ignatius. So just like me. And so You would walk underneath the statue of St. Lucy as we walked into school every morning. So she's seen holding a plate with eyeballs on them. So my daughter,
a Halloween
Lucy,
costume
yes,
dream.
My daughter, Lucy, would relish dressing up as her patron saint because she got to make eyeballs out of Play-Doh and then walk around with them on a plate. And it grossed everybody out. And she just enjoyed that. But she's interestingly enough, she is obviously she's very much venerated in Italy and mm-hmm. in England. Lucy is a very, still to this day, a very popular name in England and in Scotland. Mm-hmm. Among Protestants as well as, like I said, the Anglicans revere her. She's the patron saint of Sicily, but also of Sweden. She is the patron saint of Sweden. And she is, known that in Sweden, her feast day, because it coincides with the winter solstice,
yes.
and Sweden is so far north.
Yes.
It's the day of the year when the light, and Lucy means light, Lucia means light.
Yes.
It is common for girls to dress up in white with candles, a crown of candles, actual candles lit
wow.
on their head. Yeah, it's really beautiful. And it's primarily done in Sweden, but also in Denmark and Norway and parts of Finland.
Mm-hmm.
Girls dress as St. Lucy, and they carry something called Santa Lucia buns, St. Lucy's buns, which are like kind of like hot cross buns. And they're made with raisins and currants and saffron. And then they sing the Santa Lucia song in procession. And is the custom is that they wake their parents with their candlelight and hot coffee and the buns. For the breakfast, and so so they are they're such a treat because they're with all the butter and sugar and everything else
know
they're only to be indulged in once a year because they're so rich and so there's all sorts of beautiful customs that you can read about. There's a devotion to her in Hungary. In northern Italy, St. Lucy actually brings the gifts to children between between the 12th and 13th of December. So, there's a particular area of the Philippines where there's such a devotion to St. Lucy that there is a big community-wide novena to her for the 9 days preceding her feast day. So, somebody who, for a young martyr of the church who, died thousands of years ago, there is still such a devotion to her. And it's the custom among, more kind of Orthodox practicing Catholic families, in order to observe Advent,
mm-hmm.
That you don't put your tree up the day after Thanksgiving, right? what we have always done is to at least try to, depending on when kids have final exams.
Yes.
It's the school-age children interfering with things, but we put at least the lights on the tree on St. Lucy's Day. And maybe not all the ornaments. The decoration comes more gradually, but because she is the patron of light, and that's what her name means, the lights go on the tree. There's a beautiful article right now, and I'll put it in the show notes, in the National Catholic Register about observing Advent properly. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that they also suggest is that you put on the lights on your tree, at least, on the Feast of St. Lucy. So I recommend that to all of you.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to get my tree up before.
That's right. Well, you do a live tree or a fake tree?
Oh, fake tree.
Okay. Yeah. We had to go to a fake tree when both the dog and one of the children started eating the needles. And so.
I had to go to a fake tree the day I came out and found every needle on the ground.
Yeah. I love a real tree. But
I know, they smell great, but they're...
Yeah. Well, we've got to wrap things up, listeners, as ever. This hour has flown by, and we're so privileged to spend it with you.
Yes.
Have a beautiful Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, of St. Lucy, and to wherever and however you celebrate those days, we'll be with you in spirit, and we hope you have a blessed and beautiful week. We'll see you next week.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see?